couple of years later, we were snow skiing, and my kids at that time were 8 and 6, got off the ski lift, kid cut in front of me. I swerved, I fell. When I fell, I injured my wrist. Luckily, it wasn't anything permanent, but that was the first time that I thought, well, what if I couldn't use my hands to work? You know, how would I provide for my family?
Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Real Freedom, Real Estate Leverage Freedom, where we talk about different stories of people building time and financial freedom through different opportunities in real estate. And I'm your host, Mike Swenson. If you're looking to start your journey in real estate investing, head to our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. We've got a lot of great articles, blogs, videos that you can watch to help you get started in your journey. And for today's guest, I've got a really cool story to share. You know, most people think being a doctor is kind of the end game. It's the place where you want to be. And for some people, they realize that that role isn't necessarily the freedom that they thought it was. And in the case of our guest today, had an accident and realized, well, what if my main source of income isn't there anymore? And so we've got Dr. Jeff Anzalone here, and he's just got an incredible story of getting in the medical field, getting into real estate, and then building time and financial freedom through real estate. So he is known as the debt-free doctor. So Jeff, we're so excited to have you on the show.
Happy to be here. Excited to help educate people any way we can.
So why don't you get us started here and just share a little bit about your story?
Yeah, I'll give you the shortened down version of it. So 2 weeks before I finished my residency, I had the group practice that I was supposed to join here in my hometown in Louisiana. They pulled the deal out from me, and they don't teach you how to start a practice or run a practice in medical school or dental school. And we had a 2-month-old, $300,000 in student loan debt, already bought a house, was just paying interest only. But the worst part was I didn't know how to, you know, I didn't have any patients. I didn't know how to run a business or practice because I was relying on them. And as you can imagine how scary that was for, you know, a young family, a young couple, not knowing what to do. But, you know, God was looking out for us and opened some doors, had a guy reach out to me and said, hey, look, you can come into my building. I'll kind of teach you how to do this. He was another dental specialist, and you don't have to buy any equipment, go into further debt, just kind of pay me rent. So I did that for 2 years and started my own practice, bought my own building. And back then, Dave Ramsey was like the only, you know, you're talking like 20 years ago. He was like the guy, you know, that was kind of who I listened to. So I you know, that's all I knew. So I followed his baby steps, and after about 7 years, paid off all of that debt, including the house. Well, the thing was, you know, I was thinking, hey, you know, kind of like winning the Super Bowl, you know, you hit that goal. It's like, it's over with. You've made it. But it was kind of like, okay, yeah, it felt good, but it's like, kind of like, now what? So a couple of years later, we were snow skiing, and my kids at that time were 8 and 6, got off the ski lift, kid cut in front of me. I swerved, I fell. When I fell, I injured my wrist. Luckily, it wasn't anything permanent, but that was the first time that I thought, well, what if I couldn't use my hands to work? You know, how would I provide for my family? I couldn't. And you never think about things like that until, you know, something bad happens to you. Like, people never think about having a heart attack till they what? Have chest pain, right? So that eventually led me down the road to start looking for things more sort of like an insurance policy, and eventually led me to real estate. But when I started studying really wealthy people, you know, YouTube videos, blogs, podcasts, networking with people, like, you know, I've just been totally in the dental field, you know, just, and that's what most people do, whatever field they're in, they go to the dental meetings or medical meetings or whatever. And that's all they do. They don't ever get out. And that's probably one of my biggest regrets is not broadening my environment, because now it's so much different. It just opens your world up. But I realized that wealthy people, number one, over 90% of them they owned real estate. So like, if you ask somebody that's really wealthy, what do you do for a living? They don't tell you I am. They don't say I am a doctor, I am an attorney. They say I own businesses, I own real estate. So that was the one thing that over 90% of them owned real estate. The second thing was that they all had anywhere from, you know, multiple streams of income, but an average of 7. Most people that I know, including myself back then, had 1. So that really narrowed my focus on figuring out a way how to own real estate for multiple income streams. And I thought at that time, the only thing that you could do to get into real estate was you go out and you buy a home and you rent it out, or you go buy, you know, self-storage buildings or whatever. So I started learning how to do that. But little did I know, once I went to a meeting in Dallas, it was actually for dentists, they opened up my whole world to other ways to invest passively. Because, you know, as a doctor, we spend our time, money, and resources to getting that degree. So when you, and that's your biggest income building tool is your, you know, your active income, whatever it is. So I see these doctors, they start taking their time away from their practice and trying to learn all this stuff on their own. And what happens is their practice struggles, they make a bunch of mistakes, and now they kind of, you know, get upset and give up. But with these different passive types of investments like real estate syndications, and that's the ones that I'm mainly doing now, we can focus on what we knew how to do best, our active income, and then the more money we make actively, we can invest passively. And then what happens is you start replacing, you know, to me, you know, the Dave Ramsey debt snowball was, you know, you list out all your debt, smallest to largest. You start with the smallest one first and you throw all the money in it. And once that one's paid off, you move on to the next one. And so on and so forth till everything's paid off. Well, I came up with, you know, I don't really have a name for it. I just kind of call it the passive income snowball, to where, you know, I remember my first syndication I invested in, it was paying monthly $333.33. That was a $50,000 investment, apartment complex in Dallas, and it was an 8% preferred return. And I got that money and I was like, wow, you know, this is paying like the internet bill and then, you know, like the gas bill or whatever. And then like 8 months later, I did another one. It was like 666. So it was just, so I was slowly replacing my expenses to where I didn't have to do it. And it's crazy. Once you get that mindset of you're just going out there and investing, you know, so now I have a different mindset. I'm the kind of the Robert Kiyosaki. You know, I don't take 100% of what everybody teaches. I take little bits and pieces there. But what I like what Robert Kiyosaki teaches is, you know, you get your assets, you know, your real estate, your syndications, that sort of thing, to pay for your liabilities. So if I want to go out and buy a boat or a truck or whatever, I go buy real estate to pay the note. And that's a different mindset shift. And once you start doing that, it totally changes things for you.
Absolutely. And I'm glad it didn't take the catastrophic accident to help you think differently about it. It was kind of the what could have been accident that helped you to think differently about it. So yeah, talk a little bit about, everybody kind of has their different preference and niche of where they like to invest in. Obviously, you mentioned it's syndications, but talk a little bit about the types of investments that you like in the syndication side.
This was like 2017 multifamily, and I did several multifamily. Actually had an old traditional IRA that I wasn't able to put money in anymore, and actually opened up a self-directed IRA. So I did actually a multifamily syndication through it. It sold, it went full cycle. Then I got into, I started a website, debtfreedoctor.com, to educate people back then, just as I was learning things like what's a cap rate. Then I would write an article, what's cap rate, you know, how to calculate it, why is it important? And so writing these articles not only was getting the word out about what I was learning, but it was helping me reinforce it, you know, to learn. But then I kind of realized, you know, I don't really for me, learning, I don't really read articles too much. I watch YouTube videos. So then I started, okay, why don't I start a YouTube channel? So I took those articles and I basically repurposed them into YouTube and now Instagram and YouTube Shorts. So once I started doing that, then I started having people reach out to me and said, hey, look, you know, you're investing in these syndications and projects, and I started building a following. Do you want to see if some of your investors, if, you know, if we go through all the legal channels to allow you to raise capital for these groups, you want to see if some of your investors want to invest in the projects you're already investing in? I said, sure. And that kind of led to, I didn't even know that was anything about raising capital. I just kind of fell into it. But the reason I say that is because I start off in multifamily, then I moved, then I started doing some self-storage. Then I got into short-term rentals, I have a couple of short-term rental funds, mobile home parks, and now RV parks. And now that I've got to experience all that, I'm more focused now on mobile home parks and mainly RV parks, just because of, you know, the expenses, the taxes, the insurance, they're much cheaper to operate. You know, like if a hurricane comes and, you know, we have an RV park, well, everybody, you know, hooks up their RVs or they get in them and they leave, right? And there's not a lot of structure there in an RV park to really damage. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, a 200 unit apartment building, you know, there is, you know, there's pros and cons to everything. Private equity has really, as you probably know, bought up a lot of the mobile home parks. I know it's Sam Zell's group before he passed away. He did. Now they're starting to get into RV parks and we've built up a really nice portfolio. And our goal is to, right now we're at 14 parks. Our goal is to get about 30. And then we're going to, sell out to one of these private equity groups that are already calling us, you know, but that should tell you something. Private equity doesn't invest in things they can't make money in. And we see this trend coming. Really love the RV space. I love it because I didn't realize there's so many different ways to make income through it. You know, like an apartment, you know, people will rent from you for, you know, sign a 6-month or 12-month lease, and that's pretty much it. Well, RV parks, you have people that come in and they'll stay a night or two. That's called your transient visitor. You can actually charge more. You know, let's say there's a ball game or there's a Super Bowl or there's a holiday or something. Well, you know, kind of like hotels, you can change those day rates. Then you have people that work in the area. Maybe they're going to be working for several months or whatever. Well, they'll rent from you monthly or weekly. And then you have people that actually permanently live there. So you actually have three types of mm-hmm. tenants that are there. Then you have people, then you have laundry services that you can add on to. You have ICE, if somebody wants upgraded Wi-Fi. Another huge thing, some of our parks make six figures in propane sales, you know, for these people. So there's all types of different ways, different multiple streams of income you can make just from the RV park. And then one of the most important things is RV parks and mobile home parks have some of the highest depreciation year one. So my accountant, he told me the average apartment is anywhere you can depreciate year one, anywhere from 15 to 20% of your purchase price. So let's say you have $1 million RV park and $1 million apartment. Okay. So let's say 20%. So you can deduct $200,000 year one for $1 million average $1 million apartment complex versus mobile home park, 60 to 80%, $600,000 to $800,000. So it's a huge difference. And a lot of that accelerated depreciation comes from the land improvements that you're able to do. And that's what the majority of, you know, whenever you buy these parks, you know, the land improvements that allow you to accelerate the depreciation.
Wow, that's awesome. It's great to hear you've dabbled in a lot of different spaces, because some people might say, hey, I'm in apartments or multifamily. I don't know anything about self-storage. I don't know anything about RV parks. What would you say, even just like the little nuances and the differences, how did you learn about that? Was it watching videos, reading articles? Was it meeting other people that were in the space and doing it? You know, branching out to some of those kind of other areas, how did you grow your learning curve?
I guess it was cool in my position because I was connecting with the operators of these groups, like people. That's all they do. So I was learning from the experts, not just kind of piecemealing it together. So I would rate, you know, I would help a guy, you know, he was actually another dental specialist, and we did 4 self-storage projects together. So I was really involved in looking at the underwriting, how they look at projects, how they, you know, get the debt and get all, you know, how they manage it, you know, the insurance costs are higher over here, or they're lower over here, their expenses, you know. So I was learning from the operators, from the syndicators, from each one.
In what states, what areas are your investments in?
They're kind of all over. The majority is in the Southeast. You know, we have 14 RV parks. They're all in the Southeast except one. We actually have one that we have under contract right now that I'm probably the most excited about because it's in my favorite state, Montana. We're 2 miles from the west border of Glacier National Park. And I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. You know, it's a bed and breakfast, RV sites. So they have some pods and they have some cabins there. But for the most part, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, just bought one here in my hometown, Louisiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Oklahoma. And I have we have a mobile home park syndication in Wyoming as well.
Yeah. Now you mentioned about building relationships with operators. For people that haven't done syndications, why don't you just explain what an operator is, what that role is?
Yeah. And again, if I would have always been in dental meetings, I would have never learned this, you know?
Right.
But basically a syndication is a group investment where people come together, they pool their money, you know, form a partnership to go buy like a building or something like that. So I kind of look at it like a plane. So when there's passengers and there's pilots. So the pilots of the plane, they do everything. They run the systems check. They manage the plane. They manage the flight plan, the takeoff, the landing, everything. So that is the operator. Those are the syndicators. And then you have the passengers that just basically sit back and enjoy the ride, which is like the limited partners, the passive investors. So they buy their ticket, they pay their money, they let the pilots do the work to take off and then land on the project. So that would probably be the easiest way to explain it.
And as you're working with investors, how do they feel about being that limited partner? I know for some people, they might say, well, shoot, if I had my own flip and did it myself, I'm in control of that, right? Like I can say when I want to sell it. I can say, you know, when I want that money back. In this case, you're following somebody else's plan. So kind of talk about the benefits of that, because some people might see it as like I'm giving up control, but there's a ton of benefits for being able to do that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I always have to answer the question like if I'm doing it personally, and I can only speak from personal experience. And it really helped me being a limited partner in 10, 15, 20 deals before I even got comfortable enough to go out on my own. And these projects I've gone out on my own, I'm still partnered with people that know way more than me. But if you are already experienced in real estate, well then yeah, just keep doing that. You're an active investor. But if you're not, I would encourage you to start off passively, start learning those routes. Then you're going to be naturally learning and naturally connecting with people. You're going to be connecting with other syndicators and other limited partners. You're learning the ropes. And then at that point, you may want to diversify more. And, you know, I don't want to get into the real estate professional status, but if you can get to that point in your career to where all your depreciation is offsetting your active income, then that's the game changer. That's been the game changer for us. But that could be another episode to talk about. But when we coach other doctors and high income earners, we're always looking for ways that if they could do that, then really they really don't have to cash flow a whole lot, because if they could just wipe out their taxes, you know, I got an oral surgeon in Louisiana. He's paying $500,000-$600,000 a year in taxes. We're basically, you know, that's a wash for him now. So it's worth it just doing that. So there's people a lot of times just look at real estate as just extra income, but you also have to look at all the tax benefits and everything else that goes along with it too.
Real estate agents, are you tired of letting the busyness of your real estate business get in the way of your real estate investing goals and your financial future? I'm excited to announce that we've created the Real Freedom Investor Agent Tribe to help you. We've got a ton of content, educational tools to help accelerate your learning curve and get you on the right path to hit your investing goals. We also have a mastermind tribe of people just like you, agents that want to grow their own portfolio and encourage you and cheer you on along the way, as well as some private one-on-one coaching. So go to realfreedom.com, click on the store, you'll see the options there. We're so excited to be able to help you. I've priced it super low, so price can't get in the way, but did want to have some skin in the game for you to help with that accountability. So go check it out, realfreedom.com, click on the store. We're excited to connect with you and excited for you to connect with your tribe of real estate agents investing, trying to build their financial freedom.
So talk about your dental practice then. As you did more real estate investing, what did that do for your time in your quote unquote day job?
Yeah, it's been great because I've been able to go part-time now with the practice, but I'm working, you know, more hours in general, but I'm really, and I think it's important too, because a lot of times people don't quit what they're doing because they're like, well, I don't know anything else to do. So it's good to have something to retire to and transition to. And I really like that. You know, when you get older, I'll be 50 this year, you know, most of the research and books say you're actually happier whenever you're at a point in your life where you're teaching people stuff. And I find more fulfillment in that. And so being able to do that it's great. But in order for me to do that, I did have to cut the numbers down in the practice, which has allowed me to spend more time in the real estate, creating content, teaching, connecting with people, and then running these projects.
What does your schedule look like on a given week in terms of
I practice 3 days a week. While I'm practicing 3 days a week, I can do a lot of stuff. You know, I can do management and a lot of the things while I'm still here. But I'm pretty much working Monday through Friday, 3 days a week of the practice, but Monday through Friday with real estate. And then sometimes on the weekend, if I have to go run over and check something or whatever, to me, it's weird. You always hear people say, if you love what you do, it's not really work. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. That's, you know, that's BS or whatever. But it's really true. It's just like, it doesn't even feel like work when I'm on calls or I'm helping manage or whatever. It's just like, it's so cool. And it's just, I'm so glad I found it. And it's not right for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I always try to listen to people's situation. And sometimes I discourage them from it because a lot of people have analysis paralysis and they'll wait 3, 4, 5 years before they even attempt to invest in something. And I'm like, if you're not investing in anything during that 3 or 4 or 5 year period, because you're scared to get into real estate, I said, just don't fool with it anymore. Just keep investing in the stock market or whatever, because you're losing out on all that time. Because, you know, at the end of the day, time's the most important thing.
Well, it's really great to hear. I mean, you're, you know, going from having all your eggs in the one basket there to having all these different things happening, both as a limited partner and then on the general partner side, and then helping to educate people. So you're creating a lot of content. I've watched, you know, your videos and looked on your website, but who are the people that you're really hoping to work with to help kind of invest with you and partner with you on deals?
Well, when I first started this, it was mainly for physicians and dentists, but I guess it's just kind of a naturally other people, other high income people, accredited investors have kind of flocked in. I have a lot of IT people, you know, people working at Google and Apple, where they have these huge, huge six figure, sometimes low seven figure salaries, but they're paying a ton of taxes.
Right.
And they don't want to keep putting all their stock in Google or Apple or whatever. So they're looking for diversification. And, you know, nursing ethicists and, you know, other healthcare professionals, physical therapists, then I have some accountants and, you know, but I would say 80-85% are more of the healthcare professionals.
Well, and it's good too, because like people can relate to you because you're in the healthcare field. They can kind of see the writing on the wall of what their future looks like if they don't diversify and do other things. And so you're a great example of that. So for people that want to reach out to you and learn more about what you're doing, how can they do that?
Yeah, they go to debtfreedoctor.com. And I've got a free resource on there, a passive income guide they can download. And once they do that, we'll start sending them information. Everything's free between podcasts, articles, YouTube videos, some cool giveaways that we give out throughout the year, and occasionally some events that I'm attending. So if people want to kind of join me on some of those as well.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story, Jeff. It's cool to hear what you're doing and branching out to so many different investment opportunities as well. So congrats to you and best of luck in your future.